And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 265, coming at you on a Wednesday evening. Vacations done. We're back two episodes a week, unless something crazy happens till the season's over and beyond, because that's what we do around here. Before we get to some news, notes, and more, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, looking like a grizzled veteran over there, on Twitter at RyanVHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
Got one more vacation this season, but I don't think it will affect the pod. So for the listeners, it might as well be zero. I'm doing well, man. Had a great time over in Buffalo, New York for the last 5 days. Flew in Tuesday night, which is why we aren't doing a Tuesday night show. It's on Wednesday night because we flew back. Kids were great on the plane, which is a godsend. Saw a Shane Bieber rehab outing, which I did not expect to see for the Buffalo Bisons. They played the Syracuse Mets. We caught that one on Sunday. Played some golf on Monday. Grandma turned 95. That's family funny. Reunion type deal over there. So it was a lot of fun. Good to see everybody. Flights were smooth. And glad to be back with you. It has been probably our longest hiatus.
Yes, it has. Since we started our recording. Longest go time, for sure.
Yeah. So.
Yes, good to be back. Good to be back.
How are you doing? You've got a new lid here. You an Angels fan on us? What infiltrate you, or what are we doing?
As long as I don't go to Dodger Stadium, I try to buy some kind of swag from the stadium I go to, and I actually enjoy the Angels logo, the old school Angels logo. So I didn't mind that at all. So I thought I'd give it a whirl and see how I liked it. So yeah, new Angels lid. It's my hair's getting a little long right now, so I thought to put the hat on for the show.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, man, I missed you. We're talking before, like, so we flew out to Buffalo, like, literally during the trade deadline, like at 2 or 3. And so all this stuff was happening while I was on the flight. I am still catching. Like, I've seen every move. Ben Tidd did an awesome shout out. Ben Tidd did an awesome kind of rundown of each trade, winners and losers, on the Patreon. Martin Sokolsky also did a really great piece for the Patreon folks on the minor league side. I've seen every trade. Has every single one stuck in this 40-year-old head? Hell no. So we're still getting used to who's on what team at this point.
Most definitely. So we'll try not to screw that up as much as possible. I think it'll be worse on tomorrow night's Fab show. That's what's gonna hit.
It's gonna be tricky.
That's when the edible hits, folks. So we'll see how that one goes.
You don't want that to hit during the show, but I think
I did want to give one story from the Angels game, though. I've been saving it for on air because it was too good. So our seats were good because I told Ryan beforehand when I bought him and everything. I was like, dude, we're paying like $40 for like 4 rows from the field, like at a Giants game. I'm like 4 rows from the top of the stadium. This is pretty wild. Like, my daughter's best seat she's ever going to have, probably. It's pretty cool stuff. So they're warming up right in front of us. We're like a section over from the dugout. And first off, Ringifo comes out at the very end, looks like hell. Like, he's extra stretching. I'm like, dude, this guy's beat up right now, which kind of makes me feel a little better about the production, because like, he just looks rough at the moment. But he's out there and he's playing catch with the guy. So my daughter's at the railing and I go up because Ringifo's getting done and he's walking towards these other kids. And I turn and I show him my back of my t-shirt and I yell Ringifo. He freezes. He just freezes. And the usher next to me goes, oh, dude, you're going to get a ball. I'm like, yeah, we'll see. And so he keeps walking and he gives it to the kids like three spots down. I thought he'd give it to my daughter, but he didn't. And I look at the usher and I'm like, so why is that? And he goes, I have never seen a Ringifo shirt in this entire stadium ever. Like, I thought you had a chance. So it was pretty funny stuff in that regard.
Damn. That's tough for our guy. It's tough for Luis. Yeah.
He was shocked. He literally froze when he saw the jersey. Cause he's used to guys.
He's got a down year, but like, come on.
Yeah. So I at least got that. He saw the shirt. I was like, okay, we did that much. We got there, but yeah, I had the sticker with our logo with Ringifo in my pocket, hoping he'd come by to get a quick signature. Okay.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
Couldn't use your daughter as the pawn to.
I tried to, because once he saw me, I started pointing to her.
Right.
And it still didn't work.
Hey, man. So, effort. A for effort.
Yeah. But yeah, I wanted to mention that. The mascot, the OG mascot, saw him. He actually had a decent game that night for the season standards, put it that way. But Yeah, he saw the jersey froze, and the usher made me laugh, going, no one has worn a Ringifo shirt that he has seen all season long. So
it's good. Saw a picture of you on TV, too.
Yes, yes. I'm no, like I said, I'm no Jason DuPont, but I'm trying to work my way up there the best I can. Yeah. So it goes. All righty. All right, let's get to it. Little news and notes, get Ryan caught up here, see how it goes. But actually, first, I forgot, we have a monthly listener league update. And of course, I'm well prepared because we're back after a 10-day hiatus. And I don't have it pulled up. So, Ryan, I don't know if you have it pulled up, but
hey,
I'm pulling it up as we speak.
I've got you. I've always got you, man. Always.
What do you got for us?
Always here? Prepared. All right. So let's do a quick monthly listener league update. We pledged to do this at the beginning of the season. We want to see this through and kind of make this a monthly thing. And we've also been posting every Monday to the Patreon weekly standings and each week's top 15. So that's all still going strong. First place overall, which is the prize for that out of our 150 teams, our 10 separate 15-team leagues, is a trip to a registration for First Pitch Arizona out in Arizona, November 6th through 9th, 3 months from today, my friend. Jason Weir is leading the overall. Jason has been leading the overall for much of the season. I think he spent a few days outside of first place after like the wildness of April. So it's been a pretty dominant season so far from Jason Weir. However, this is certainly not a runaway. Second place, we've got Ben Bingham, who I've been writing up every single week, it seems like, on Monday. Ben's been rising like crazy. Up the overall, Ben's in second. Ben Tidd is in third. Lucas Beery has climbed up to fourth. Michael Cecchini in fifth. I will, that's a hell of a top five, man.
Yeah. And I think that's four out of the five that have never been to FPAS, if I am correct. So I know Lucas is there every year. But
yeah, Lucas, I don't think Ben Bingham's been there either. So
no,
we have some potential first time.
That'd be four newbies. That'd be good.
Yep.
The next five, we have at sixth, Tony Musso. Seventh, Josh Redman. Eighth, Mark Jordan. Nine, Eric Leggett. And 10th, Marion Osborne. So there's been a lot of moving and shaking since the last time we updated, because I don't remember a few of those names being in this discussion.
Yeah, Marion has definitely risen quite a bit, yes, to go to 10. Sarah Sanchez has been in the top 15. I'll round out the top 15 here. Sarah Sanchez has been in the top 10, really, the last few weeks. So she's checks in at 11. Matthew Hennings at 12. Kenneth Norton at 13. Steven Ruschak at 14. And Brandon Waddell seems to be at the top of every overall.
Dude, every board. It's crazy. He's climbing up our Vegas league. He's all over the place. He's a good. I was gonna say he's good at fantasy, folks. Good at fantasy. Yeah.
That my favorite part of the listener league update, because I think this is the first month we've been able to do this.
Yeah, I'm about
to say, our own teams.
You finally get to have a moment here. Yes, you're welcome.
Bloomfield checks in at 87 overall out of 150. So I am almost. That sounds terrible. I have been down like 120 out of 150. So this is one of those where it's just interesting. I have a lot of pride in how I do in this league. Just that the auction did not go well. I could go on and on about my team, but no one really cares. But I'm trying to grind and at least finish in the upper half of this thing. 87th out of 150. I'm pretty proud of that. Bubba, where are you at, man? Oh, and I'm ahead of
your dad,
the 73-year-old now. Happy birthday. Roger Bloomfield is 94. So I have passed him. Looks like I passed him today. Birthday present.
Yep, there you go.
I'm ahead of him. Where are you at?
I'm at 107. I dropped five spots today. So this is getting like, I keep moving up. I've been as high as like 90-ish. I keep kind of going back and forth. I haven't really cracked the threshold yet. But it's better than it was a long time ago. Let's put it that way. But it's still not ideal.
Well, I would say it's ideal.
For you, it is. Yes. For you, it's very ideal. It's been a rough go in that league. I've happy with some other leagues, but no one cares, because that's not what we're talking about right now. But
it should be a pretty sweet race at the top of the overall. So looking forward to see who we get to meet, hopefully the first time out in Arizona this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it and hoping that people can get some airfare. I know it's actually, to fly into the Phoenix airport from where I'm at is super cheap right now. So I hope it's not bad for everybody else. Because if you find out in basically October 1st-ish that you have an access to November 1st-ish trip, you're going to have to pick a last-minute flight. Or I bet you they could use it for the following year. I have a hunch we could probably arrange something there. Because that is a short-term turnaround to book hotels, book airfare, and all that good stuff. But we'll update you again next month. Let's get to some news and notes before we get to the live Bloom Board's last 30 days pitchers. Let's talk Nick Lodolo heads to the IL with a blister on his left index finger. He left in the third inning of Tuesday's start. He'll be out for at least 15 days, of course. Blisters should heal, quote-unquote, in 15 days, Ryan, but they might not. So I think we're talking around the 20th we'll be getting Lodolo back, so about 5 weeks of the season to go. How are we feeling about this?
Pretty disappointed, because not only did I have a ton of Nick Lodolo, not only what was this injury, like what, an inning and two-thirds or something into the week of a two-step?
Yep. It was quick. Yep.
On a Monday, like that's a kick to the lower extremity. But also Nick Lodolo was like, he had been pitching incredible. 1.24 ERA over Lodolo's last five starts. Skills were excellent. 29% strikeout rate, basically one walk in his previous five starts. So just happened at the wrong time in terms of like time of the week. And also like Lodolo really was pitching like an ace. So it sucks, but you just hope. And the other thing, I mean, blisters are tough, man. We don't know. No, blisters are not created equal. Could be the minimum, could be something that lingers, could be something that affects his pitch mix on the, you know, on the comeback. We don't know. But I think the actionable takeaway is pretty clear. You're not doing anything with Nick Lodolo. You're holding and waiting for him to come back, given how he has pitched lately.
Yeah, Nick Martinez rejoins the rotation.
Yeah. So
that's what you get to look, well, maybe look forward to, depending on how you feel about that.
Yeah, I have some Nick Martinez, and I saw on Monday he was not like scheduled to pitch, and I was like, yep. Is Nick Martinez still on the Reds? Did he get traded? Did I miss something? No, it's not, but yeah.
So, yeah, keep that on in mind when you're setting lineups for the upcoming weeks, and hope there's no setbacks for one Nick Lodolo. Michael Soroka, on the other hand, could be bad. Michael Soroka hits the IL with a shoulder strain, a right shoulder strain. He left in after two innings of work. Velocity was down below 90 miles an hour in the start, so it was already a ticking time bomb from those that watch Savant throughout a start. He leaves the start. MRI came back cleanish, I guess, just the way. So it's just a strain at this point in time. I'm still thinking we're going to miss 3 to 4 weeks at least. What's your thoughts on this one?
This is a kind of a nice precursor to the live Bloom Boards that we're going to talk about tonight. The Mike Soroka had the lowest or the furthest velocity drop of any pitcher in baseball last 30 days. And so that's kind of actually how I like to use that board, is really those fallers and fastball velocity. Soroka was 94.1 miles an hour with the fastball heading into the last month. And that was down to 91.9. Like you said, Bubba, below 90 his last time out. So I like that. Soroka, for me, like I've always kind of said, the skills have been much better than the results this season. But this just doesn't seem, this isn't like a Lodolo blister where once it heals, I think we're good. I think the combination of shoulder and lower velocity and having less than 2 months left in the season, like having that all come back, probably not going to be great. Opens up a spot, I believe, for Cade Cavalli, right?
No, Ben Brown. There we go. He got traded to the Cubs. Got traded to the Cubs. Well done.
There we go.
Cade
Cavalli over under. He's been met.
Cade Cavalli got a spot because Soroka was traded. You got that part. Hey, right.
That's what I meant.
I know. I got you. I knew your head was at. And Cavalli, we'll get to him tomorrow night, most likely on the Fab Show when it comes to Cade Cavalli. But yes, Ben Brown came in after Soroka left. I think he threw 4 or 5 innings. Looks like it'll be the Ben Brown show. They haven't announced it officially, but that just checks out with all things that they've been doing. I'm still not picking up Ben Brown.
You know me. I want to. Ben Brown's like Aaron Nola, so you know I'm in. Skills are there. Results haven't been, but I'm still probably not in on Ben Brown.
Yeah, I'm going to sit and watch that one from the sidelines. Austin Riley went back to the IL with an abdominal injury. Still no timetable for his return, but the fact he missed 2 weeks already with a similar injury, I'm thinking at least a month, and the Braves might not have any reason to bring him back, Ryan.
Right. That's the biggest thing. Like, why rush it? And we'll probably mention it with our next guy as well. Very little, if any, interest in Nacho Alvarez, who seems to be the third base guy going forward. At least the playing time might be there, but I need to see something from Nacho Alvarez in the majors before I go bidding on him. So I don't know. Maybe you wait this out another week for Riley for something more definitive, but I would have an itchy drop finger.
Yeah, I'd have an itchy drop finger. It is weird, though. Like, we keep saying that they have no reason to bring him back, but like, they're ramping Sale back up, which makes no sense to me, coming off like that big innings jump last year.
Yeah.
Then there's other guys they're trying to get throwing again, but they're not quite there yet. They're not having surgery for Holmes. Like, there's a lot of things that I'm questioning that the Braves are up to at this point in time. And then there's more news on Riley. Riley hurt his abdominal region, his you know, oblique. 2 innings before he actually left the game. He came out and said he heard it like charging a ground ball. And
that's
then
your
he
favorite.
Heard it. Yeah, he heard it worse a few innings later when he tried to tag Ellie.
That's your favorite thing is when the player gets hurt and still goes.
Yeah, it's been such a
Dave Roberts. Nothing ticks you off more than
Dave Roberts is the top of the list. There's no denying that whatsoever. Aaron Boone's starting to get up that list. So he's got some competition right now. The evil empires from both coasts, they got some managers that I'd like to have a couple of chit chats with and see where it goes. But yes, you hit the nerve.
Okay. Hey, I'm glad even after 10 days off or whatever, I can still poke the bear and get it going.
The same sarcastic person that people either love or hate, so it's never going to change. All right, you mentioned that other name, Ronald Acuña Jr. This is more of a quickie. It's a calf injury, not an Achilles injury for now, but those are very closely together, if that makes sense. Like, usually they go hand in hand if things take place. He was also playing with the injury for a couple days, not just a couple innings, before he aggravated it worse. He's starting to ramp up hitting progression, but again, who knows how that entails. Thoughts on Mr. Acuña?
Not much. Acuña's so good that you just hold and hope for the best. So similar to Riley, no reason to rush back. I will say, though, like, I know this is a little bit off, but like, I think with someone like Chris Sale, who you mentioned, I think there is some value in at least getting some late season reps just to build back up and get there on the pitching side. It may not mean going five innings, going six innings.
It might be
exactly. That's the only thing, is it might be that kind of Garrett Crochet treatment that we saw last year. But certainly with Acuña, like, you have to hope that he comes back. And the guy truly does want to play, and it's going to basically be Atlanta telling him he's not playing in order for that to happen. So we'll see. You hold and hope for the best. Have a ton of Acuña on best ball leagues right now, an underdog, and it's like playoff time right now, and it's not a great time for this to be happening.
That's not great timing at all. Tommy Edmond hits the IL with a sprained ankle. It's been bugging him for a long time. He re-aggravated it over the weekend. So he goes to the IL. Max Muncy came back and double-donged right out the gate. Glasses are a thing, folks. Just throwing it out there. Fix your eyes. But Edmund, it's been bad for a while with him. He's been a drop in some formats already. What are your thoughts if you are still holding on to Edmund? I think it's pretty clear by now.
I'm not. If I could pull it up quicker, I would look up Edmund's splits since he came. Well, did he ever go on the IL? He just missed like five games.
He never officially went on the IL that I can remember.
No. But obviously, I feel like this has been nagging at Edmund for a while. Was not the same player since missing games a month or so ago. And so, yeah, this is an easy drop and move on for Tommy Edmund. And it sucks. We both liked Tommy Edmund a ton entering the season. It looked like it was going to hit.
Yep.
But injuries are, as we all know, pretty big part of this game that we play.
Some people don't like to say there's luck in this game. There's definitely luck involved in avoiding injuries. There's no denying that whatsoever. Speaking of which, Jackson Churio, man. I have a few shares. Some people might know Jackson Churio. Dude's having a really good season. Like, people maybe expected more from him. I'm very content with what he's done. Yes, maybe the average, but like, he's been very, very good. Bad hamstring injury. Not Isak Paredes bad, but it's bad. He had a PRP injection. He's starting his rehab process, not rehab games, rehab process. Be very clear on that. They're hoping to get him back in 2 to 4 weeks. That was a report on Tuesday. 2 to 4 weeks. I think it's on the 4 week side of things because Milwaukee does need him back. They are in a playoff push. They have one of the best records in baseball. Like, so they need him back. At the same time, they need him back for the postseason. So bringing him back early is a problem. So that's a very fine line they're about to play with.
There's a difference between rushing him back and getting him back and ready for the playoffs. So yeah, it's brutal. I just think Jackson Chourio is so valuable that, yeah, I mean, if you get 2 or 3 weeks of Chourio at the end of the season, even that can be worth holding. So good that you hold. And yeah, like we saw the Brewers do this with Christian Yelich. It might have been last year, 2 years ago. Had that pretty bad back injury.
Both
might have been both. Knowing Yelich is back, but they kind of did the same thing where Yelich came back the last week of the season just to get some reps for the postseason. It would behoove the Brewers to do that, but hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully Chourio's back and plays the last whatever month plus of the season. But yeah, it sucks and kind of out of the blue, right? There was it was
freakish, yeah. Freakish injury with him. And it kind of, this is an off-season discussion, but we know these guys that get soft tissue injuries, it's easier to get them going down the line. I'm not even close to saying injury prone. He's young. He's got to keep that in the back of your mind almost, weirdly enough, with these guys now. Sal Frelick's been playing a ton. He's been banged up for a few days, but he's been playing really well in Chourio's absence. Uncle Tedman's is Isaac Collins. Isaac Collins is awesome. He's actually getting Rookie of the Year buzz now, and he's playing regardless of Chourio was out. He's playing every day, no matter what. Last one I got for you is another Milwaukee Brewer, Jacob Mizorowski. The Miz goes to the IL with a tibia contusion from a line drive off his leg. Logan Henderson was up. The Miz threw a bullpen on Tuesday. All signs look to him returning after the 15 days.
Yeah, and I wonder if this isn't when your kid's outside playing, scuffs up their knee. Like, you can still keep playing, but you want to go in and, have a popsicle or something. You don't want to keep playing. I'm not saying Miz is doing that, but I think the Brewers are using this to limit innings. We've talked a lot about Miz in the Discord in terms of just what do we expect rest of season. We know, we just talked about the Brewers with Chourio. We're fairly confident the Brewers are making the postseason. They need Mizorowski, and there's not a whole ton of need to push Miz. I still think even when Miz comes back, probably good ratios, you're going to get the Ks. Why push him 5-6 innings? I don't know about the win total for Miz when he gets back, but I feel like this was a convenient thing for the Brewers to give Henderson a few starts, let Miz chill, manage that workload so he can be ready in October.
Yeah, because Henderson's going to be a part of their postseason run also. They could literally have those two guys piggyback each other the rest of the way if they really wanted to. Usually you want either a lefty-righty or a soft toss or hard thrower type situation to make it really effective, but if you want to limit both their innings to get ready for the postseason, that's one way to go about it. If all things have, they had Jose Quintana throw a gem versus the Braves today. The Brewers are just clicking on all cylinders at this moment. Andrew Vaughn, insane. It's beautiful watching this team.
He's no Colson Montgomery, but
no.
Andrew Vaughn's close. No.
The chat loves Colson Montgomery. I don't know why.
I wonder why.
They love Colson Montgomery. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I didn't even hate on the guy that much. It was just you kept asking about him. I was like, stop asking me about Colson Montgomery.
I think you picked the wrong answer on everyone now.
Yeah, because the answer is Colson Montgomery whoever the hell, every 30 teams you ask me to compare some fab pickup to. The answer was Colson Montgomery. Yeah, he's been on a freaking heater. It's been nuts.
Mitch D has a great point. Andrew Vaughn is no Lynn and Sosa. Nope. Sosa double dong tonight, dude. He's been
double tonight.
Out. I think he had one early, hit one late right before we went on the air. So I think that's two.
I mean, White Sox are
he's at the plate right now with 2-1 and no out.
Against Munoz. Jesus.
Yeah.
Lynn
Sosa is beast mode too. All right, we'll keep Ryan distracted here. Let's get to the live Bloom boards, Mr. Bloomfield. Last 30 days pitchers, what are we looking at on this first board, because it is our favorite category that we love to talk about, Ryan?
Oh man, you did catch me off guard. I did not preload this. It has been 10 days. All right, so the live Bloom boards, this is I'll just give a quick lay of the land. This is basically a set of Bloom boards that I update every single day for the Patreons, Google Sheets that subscribers have access to, can check it out whenever they want to. 5 tabs to it. there's a teams level tab looking just kind of lefty righty, how good each team is, how they've been the past month. There's a year to date hitters, last 30 day hitters, which we talked about at some point last week. For that episode, there's a year-to-date pitchers tab, and then what we're going to talk about tonight, which is kind of like our monthly check-in almost of the last 30 days pitchers whose skills have improved or gotten worse the most over the last 30 days. For the last 30 pitcher tab, what we're going to run through tonight is, yeah, the strikeout minus walk rate, risers and fallers from over the last 30 days from versus before that. Same with fastball velocity, and then pitchers who have changed their pitch mix the most over the last 30 days, and most importantly, whether or not it is actually working for them. So I will let you kind of steer the ship as you normally do with ease, and we'll start with the golden goose, strikeout minus walk. This is probably my favorite list that I honestly check out every single day when I update this sheet, is just to keep tabs on that strikeout minus walk rate, that core skill, who is getting better, who is not throughout the season. And then I take a deeper dive and try and figure out why that's happening. So that's what we'll talk about tonight.
Let's go straight to the top, to the golden goose himself, the Miz. We know he's good, Brian, but the last 30 days, he has a 41% K to walk. 41%. That is insanity. Even the best closers in baseball don't usually get to 41%. His last three starts before he went to the IL, he had 26 strikeouts to 4 walks in 13 and 2/3 innings. That is just nuts. That's all I can say. I don't have a whole lot else on Miz. We know how good the kid is, but I at least had to bring it up because 41% is just stupid.
It is, and the most impressive thing for me is those 4 walks in 13 and 2/3 innings with, and you'll hear me mention this a lot, ball percentage. League average is 36%, but it's a very good indicator for control. The Miz is at 28% over the last month. Again, it's not a full sample month because the Miz got hurt, and we still have, yes, this is still All-Star break over the last month. So not the biggest sample, but 28% ball rate for the Miz, who that's probably the biggest thing that I was worried about, is the control, lack of control. Very nice to see that from Jacob Mizorowski. Again, pre-injury. Again, have concerns about the length the rest of the season, but from a pure per-inning skill standpoint, you're right. 41% strikeout minus walk is pretty much unheard of. League average is like 16, and we like anybody over 20. This dude's doubled it, so there you go.
Yeah, that's just insane. It's the best way we can go about it when it comes to the Miz, so... Let's talk about Mr. Joey Wentz. This one is a guy that I've had trouble figuring out. Some smart people have been interested in him for a couple weeks now. Had a 6% K to walk earlier this season, 21% over the last 30 days. His last 4 starts have been in the Braves rotation, where he has 18 strikeouts to 5 walks. What are you noticing with Joey Wentz? Because we actually had some listener questions on him as well, because quite the surprise to many people.
Quite the surprise to me as well. The role is going to be safe. The whiffs have been there over the last month, 12.5% swing strike. So that kind of validates the strikeout rate that we've seen, at least somewhat from Joey Wentz. It's been a 27% K rate. I don't know if he holds that, but you look at these kind of per pitch level sub indicators, and that all looks good for Joey Wentz. Another thing I like to look with these pitchers in 30 day samples is what's been the level of competition. It has been versus Milwaukee, at Kansas City, at Texas, versus the Yankees, at the Cardinals. So not feasting on weak competition. It's been a pretty neutral schedule, some good teams in there. So really nice to see that from Joey Wentz. This is a 27-year-old. Like, I don't know about the long term, but I think certainly the way that Wentz is pitching right now, the rotation safety that he has, high-end streamer is kind of where I fall with someone like Joey Wentz.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. High-end streamer, that's been the kind of the topic people have talked about in Fab of late, to see where that checks out. But yeah, I get it. I've just been, I guess, tough to jump on that train with so many others.
Last thing real quick, per the starting pitcher planner, which we have on available on the Patreon says Joey Wentz is a lefty, and so many teams are so bad against lefties. Wentz gets the Marlins and at Cleveland his next two starts, which is the second most favorable schedule of any pitcher over the next 2 weeks. Miami's been hotter lately, but still struggling a bit against lefties, and Cleveland's been bad against lefties all season. So when I say high-end streamer, I certainly like Wentz in both those matchups.
Yep, that's a good call there because, yep, Major League Baseball, lefty is not a good combination these days. Speaking of which, Jason Alexander, not a lefty, but he's been pitching very, very well of late. He had a 1% K to walk entering the last 3 days, up to 14%. So it's not like a massive jump, but I think it's worth discussing because he won't be in the Astros rotation much longer, but he might get some bullpen work. He might get some more spot starts towards the stretch run. So at least I wanted to bring him up. Dude has 15, 17 Ks over his last four starts with seven walks. Last two starts more impressive than the previous two. So I don't know. I don't have a ton on him, but it's just he took advantage of the Marlins, which you just talked about with Joey Wentz, and the Nationals, which you got to take advantage of those two teams.
You do. I'm not too – I mean, Alexander's not going to have a rotation spot, right? Should, like once the Astros
– Christian Javier comes back maybe this weekend. So
right. Yeah, I mean, I did read your AOSPT tomorrow on HQ, and yeah, there was like a paragraph for each Astros starter that's coming back, and it was –
Yeah, it was like seven pages long, so they're all coming back.
And then the other thing, too, like Jason Alexander is the number three highest riser, but he is rising from a 1% strikeout minus walk, which is basically the same number of walks as strikeouts, which is terrible.
Almost the same K to walk we have, Ryan.
Yeah, which, yeah, would be zero. So, yeah, to go from like horrendous to still slightly below average, you're 32, you don't have a rotation spot moving forward, most likely. Yeah, no thanks.
All right. I get a lot of things wrong. I take my L's often. I remember saying, why do people spend so much money on Yuri Perez? Like, I loved Yuri Perez, but people spend a lot of money in FAB on Yuri Perez. It's working out if you did. Perez has increased to a 22% K to walk over the last 30 days. And it's not just the strike, like, that's obviously helped, but the dude's just been a 5-6 inning guy. It's been literally 0-1-2-0-1-0-3-3-1. Those are his earned runs over his last nine starts. He's getting at least five Ks, and it's two walks or less. Like, the dude's been outstanding. So what do you have on Yuri Perez? Because he's been very, very good over his 50 innings pitched this season.
Yeah, very impressive stuff from Yuri Perez. I will join you in taking that L. We will both hold the L together. The thing for me, yeah, just the in-season improvement as Perez kind of keeps going here. Like from June to July, it was a 6% K-minus walk in June, up to 26% in July. Almost doubled his swing strike rate. Like, everything looks good. And then I'm gonna cheat a little bit and scroll over to the last 30 days pitch mix changers over the last month. Yuri Perez is on that list. So you have a little bit of a pitch mix change to go with this jump in skills for Yuri Perez. In Perez's case, he's gone super heavy fastball, throwing it almost 60% of the time. And he throws it for strikes. Fastball is 29% ball rate. That's really good. And he gets whiffs with it. So fastball has been dominant. Perez is leaning on it more, and it's turning into excellent results. He's also throwing it. I don't know how I feel about this. Fastball velocity, he's throwing 98. I don't know,
Coming back from TJ.
This is more this is more a 2026 type of thought that's entering my mind. It's like, I don't know. We'll see.
I was going to make the joke. I'm like, remember I took him, I think, in round five of the meatball draft last year when he's coming off that great 2023, and then he goes and gets hurt.
With Scherzer. I remember that. The double tap.
Yeah, so, like, I think I just need to tell myself not to take him in this draft just to, like, don't even play with it. But speaking of that velocity, and again, we'll talk more about Cade Cavalli on Thursday night. Dude was pumping gas in his first start back, and I did not love that at all. Like you said, it's the you know, injury concerns, the old men in us, whatever it is. But I was like, can you just pitch for a little bit before we start flamethrowing it up there?
I hate to just blindly, fade anyone that's throwing 98. Like, you have to pick good pitchers, and a lot of good pitchers throw hard. So, it's been really impressive for Yuri Perez, and the command has been fantastic. So kudos to everyone who took that shot in FAB, because he wasn't like crazy expensive. I remember doing our
he was a triple digit guy he's triple digits for a lot of people.
All right. But he wasn't like, he wasn't a Jack Caggs.
Who would do that?
Who would do that, man?
Like who? Idiot. Who throws a shoe?
Yeah, me. Like,
that's all I gotta ask. All right. This is one that I think warrants discussions for the fact that most of us, not all, most were burying Luis Severino when he was talking about he hates pitching in his own park. He's getting shelled everywhere. He had an 8% K to walk in the last 30 days, up to 19%, which is above average. And the results have followed Ryan since the 11th. His last five starts, home and away, three on the road, two at home. It's been three earned, one earned, two, one. Dude's got eight K, or five or more Ks in four out of five. Two of those starts, he has eight strikeouts. He looks like a new man on the mound. So I don't know if I want to trust it, but at the same time, I can at least say, hey, he might still have something in the tank to stream down the road.
Yeah, for me, I'm always going to be a little bit hesitant just because I feel like we know who Luis Severino is. And even though the splits have been pretty even home away, I mean, even for the season hasn't been that much of a difference between home away. So the kind of the everything we hear about Severino hating to pitch in Sacramento is, I don't know. I mean, the skills are pretty similar, but nice to see. I still, you know, to go up from 8 to 19%. The other thing you like to see, and I'm going to, where's he at? I think he's a pitch mix change guy as well. Yes. He's a fastball velocity guy. Fastball velo has been up a full tick over the last 30 days as well. So this is someone, again, that double-edged sword of fastball velocity. Yeah, like maybe it leads to injuries when you're above 97, whatever. But if you're a guy sitting 95 and you're suddenly a full tick like that, and you're the same guy, a mile an hour in fastball velocity can certainly make a difference. So nice to see Severino, especially given the age, the previous injuries with him, to be able to not only keep pitching through August, but to do it with higher fastball velo is impressive. The home park is always going to worry me, though, and that's not really his fault. I guess it is because he signed there, but he has to pitch there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. At least we're seeing these improvements. They're kind of backed by other things, the fastball and whatnot. So you can at least, like, hey, if he's on the road coming up, like he'll be available in 12s and a lot of, maybe not all. If you're not an NPC, he's probably available. Let's put it that way. And he's a guy to think about in your points leagues because he's striking guys out. He's going deeper into games. Like there's something there for Luis Severino down the stretch that shouldn't be as ignored as I would not even have considered him like a month ago. All righty, Brady Singer is another one of those guys, similar to the Luis Severino bubble. He went from 11% K to walk to 22% over the last 30 days. And this is a guy that over his last six starts, it's been three earned runs or less in five out of the six. His last three starts, eight or more strikeouts. He's walked two or less over those last six starts. Looking a lot better out there. And four of the last five have been at home, Ryan. His worst start was on the road in Washington. So it's not even, you can't even blame the ballpark with Singer. Singer's strikeouts have always been a concern in the past, which is why some people don't like to draft him because he's a ground ball guy. Changeup has to be effective. So yada, yada, yada. He's figuring something out here. Maybe it's the new team, maybe something, but he's striking guys out and he's pitching really well at home.
Pitching really well at home, which you certainly like to see. And the kind of the one level deeper skills do support what Brady Singer's been doing over the last month. It's been over a 13% swinging strike, which is awesome for starting pitchers. Control's been, we kind of always assume the control is going to be there for Brady Singer, 33% ball rate over the last month. So throwing strikes, getting whiffs. And like you said, Bubba, doing much of that at home. The schedule hasn't been that tough, right? Like the last five starts have been
true.
The Marlins, who, yes, hitting better of late for sure. Road Rockies, the Nats, Tampa Bay, and then the Braves. But your schedule is your schedule. And these are still major league bats, and you're pitching this well against major league teams. That's pretty impressive. And this is another one where it's just good to like, with Singer, to me, Singer's always like a jag. He's always just a guy to me. And this type of pitcher for me always slips through the cracks as we get into dog days. Like I did not really realize how good Brady Singer's been over the last month.
All right. The last one I want to talk about here on the risers side of thing is Max Scherzer. Because this is a guy that couldn't keep his thumb healthy. Even when he pitched three or four innings, it wasn't like, you know, the Mad Max type setups. He's gone up to a 27% K to walk over the last 30 days. That's resembling some Mad Max. That's a nice 11% bump for the big man. And he's limiting the damage. He's 3 earned runs or less. He's going 5-6 innings in every start. And he's not walking anybody. He's got 2 walks total in his last 4 starts to go with 27 strikeouts. That'll help with this number. So I'm thinking it's all systems go for Max. It could obviously change at any moment with his back, his thumb, everything else, because he's hashtag old as F. But we got to respect what he's doing for now.
Got to respect what he's doing. And, like, just have to, like, this isn't really fantasy, but, like, this dude is just, a, like, he's competitive as hell. Like, what does he have to prove anymore? I mean, like, he's just out there. He's 41. Yeah. Just he's in the Hall of Fame.
I wanted the Giants to sign him, not Verlander. I was so pissed. I'm like, at least I'll take the bad back. At least when he's on the mound, he's going to go freaking do stuff.
He's got his ring. Like, really nothing to.
I mean, his wife probably makes him pitch. Game. You think you want him home all day with nothing to do?
It's true. Be a little intense.
Go take $1 million deal. Just get out of the house.
A little intense. He was like one of the lead negotiators in the union with the CBA like a few years ago. Like, the guy's just intense as hell, and that's why he's able to do this when he's 41 years old. I'm always just like waiting for like the notification on my phone to say like Scherzer hurt his thumb or something. Like that's the biggest thing. I know a lot of like your fantasy leagues right now are approaching trade deadlines and that sort of thing, and it's like you want to, like, Scherzer while he's healthy is still really damn good. Of course it's not peak Scherzer, but it just feels like at any moment this something is going to creep up and ding him. But until that happens, like, man, 27% K minus walk for Max Scherzer over the last month that's among the best in baseball. So it's really cool to see him do this.
No doubt about it. On the Fowler side, I'm not going to go as deep on this, but I want to highlight a few. Jansen Junk was the talk of the streaming town for a while.
Yeah,
he's gone from a 21% K to walk to 10% over the last month. He is throwing junk is the nicest way I'll put it. He's getting smacked around the yard because he brings the milkshake to it. What's your thoughts here on Jansen Junk?
Man, you're a little rusty there. One today. Jansen Junk with here's the problem. And this is why we look at skills and not the results. 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. Five innings for Jansen Junk, who has a sub-4 ERA. He's 6-2. Like, that stuff looks good, but you feel like this is something that's going to go off the rails pretty soon. If I look up Junk's next few starts, that was today against Houston. Next is at Cleveland. Think you're probably safe throwing him there. At Boston the following week, not feeling very good about that one. So, I'd say just a streamer, not even a high-end streamer who we were talking about with Joey. Were we talking with Joey Wentz?
Joey Wentz.
Yeah. Like that type of mold.
I just wanted to mention Robbie Ray went from an 18% to 8% K to walk over the last 30 days. His last 2 starts have been much, much better. So I'm not too concerned there. I don't know if you had anything else to add to Robbie Ray, but it's like just not all things are created equal. These boards just make you look a little more.
Yeah, I saw on the Discord that Ray wasn't pitching well in today, but then I see the box score now and he pitched 6 innings, 8 Ks, 2 walks. So that is nice to see.
I'll take for that Robbie every Ray. Time out, every yeah. time. Sign me up.
Hell of a season, dude. I 2.85 ERA on the year for Robbie Ray, and for him to be doing this, I'm not that concerned. Like that 8, and that's the thing with small samples last 30 days. This 8% K minus walk, Robbie Ray will be off this board tomorrow with his 8 strikeout performance today. So
bingo. So that's why I wanted to mention it real quick. Walker Buehler minus 2% the last
30 that's days. Bad to be one of the biggest fallers, and you're falling from a place that's already not good.
That's bad. Bubich got hurt, that makes sense. D. Sclafani, whatever. Matthew Liberatore 15% to minus 2.
Did not realize that.
Yeah, his fall has been rough. I haven't dropped him yet, but he's pretty much just been on my bench. I think I've started him a couple times in 15s based on situations is the way I'll put it, but has not been a primary target of mine to start lately. It's been brutal, Ryan. If you like dig in deeper, it's 1 earned run, but 4 runs scored. 1 earned run, 6 earned runs, 2-0. So he's not like he's giving up a ton of runs. He's basically giving 2 earned runs or less, like 7 of his last 8. He's walking too many guys. He's not striking anybody out. That's his probably his early in the year, he is racking up Ks and not walking guys. That has gone away right now.
That has gone away. The whiffs have completely gone away. The strikeout rate isn't that great to begin with. 9.5% this year for Matthew Liberatore. That's down. That's been cut in half. That's 4.5%. Again, it's only three starts. It's 11 innings over the last 30 days. I, you know, we need to caution that, especially with the All-Star break being in this time frame. But you wonder, given Matthew Liberatore's past workload, that sort of thing, like, does this start to kind of fall apart? And when did the Cardinals just say, okay, we traded Helsley, we're kind of out this year. Great year, Matthew, but let's start to slow things down in September.
Yeah, I pulled up his month-to-month splits right now. March, April, 23.1 K percentage, 21.5% K to walk. In May, 20% K, 15.1. So the walk started to come up, Ks went down. June, down to 16.5% K, 9.9% K to walk. July, 11.1% K, 11.1% walk. And in his one start, basically, in August, 5% K, 10%. Literally, it's just been a complete passing of the torch the wrong direction. As is this year, I just wanted to emphasize to your point of how the production has quickly dwindled because he was amazing early in the season.
He pitched today.
Anybody else on the
Dodgers?
Sorry. Grant Holmes, we don't have to talk about him, obviously. The kind of poor production might signal part of the injury situation. Mackenzie Gore. Lots of questions in the chat about Mackenzie Gore for tonight's show. So let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Ryan, this has been so painful because it's a guy I've been on for like multiple years. I was over the moon with how well he pitched for the first half of the season. I wish I didn't know about the last like 6 weeks.
Yeah. Which is kind of the familiar refrain with Mackenzie Gore, right? Is this kind of second half, it starts to fall apart, but he bucked the trend a little bit last year. I'm trying to pull up. Yes. In September of last season. So we saw this exactly. Yeah. We like this was a similar, if we did the same exact show this time last year, I'm guessing Mackenzie Gore probably would have been on this list. And then all of a sudden in September, it was a 1.26 ERA over 28 innings with a 22% strikeout minus walk for Mackenzie Gore. That strong finish in September, like, I know we talked about this a ton and over draft season, and you were even more in on Mackenzie Gore than I was. It was like that September, like the ability for Gore to actually pitch through basically a full season and do so very well in September was very nice to see. Could that happen again this season? Of course, like trying to predict starting pitchers is not easy, but it's hard to be optimistic on that type of turnaround for Mackenzie Gore, just the way things have gone for him lately. He had that famous, like, what, 3 years in a row of a 1.4 whip, and we're at 137 right now, Bubba. So I know it fits your team whip mold, but we're pushing a fourth straight season of a 1.4 whip for Mackenzie Gore.
He might be my new Eduardo Rodriguez. So I could just never quit and always had a 1.4 whip by the end of the season. Like, we're here again. Sporer mentions, is this just who Mackenzie Gore is then, prone to streaks, but still a middling pitcher in the end? Quite possibly. Right. Feels like that's who Liberatore might be too. Like, this is just a thing with some of these guys. And I think it's a broader discussion for probably the off season. And it kind of was in the Discord today, but I think there's, the reason I like the podcast is you can talk about it and like figure it all out.
Yeah.
There's not that many elite pitchers anymore. I know it's been well discussed, but I think there's a discussion worth having about after maybe three or four guys, maybe just a couple guys, you just start playing games. You just build your depth and stream pitching wise. Cause there's not a lot of guys you can pretty much just lock into your lineup right now.
The other interesting thing with Mackenzie Gore, because I was trying to find some silver lining. Obviously, the silver lining is the strikeouts, right? You've got 148 Ks. But even when Mackenzie Gore was good Mackenzie Gore in the first half, it was a 309 ERA. Dude, he won three games in the first half with a 309 ERA. He's got four wins on the entire season. So the lack, like the Ks have been there, but the lack of wins, again, not entirely his fault. And then the ratios, that whip, it's tough. It's tough given where we thought Mackenzie Gore was going in the first half.
I'm with you. All right, let's switch to the fastball velocity board. Give people a rundown real quick of what we're going to look at. We're going to fly through these last two boards for those keeping track at home.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. Just last 30 days, how is your average fastball velocity compared to the season leading up until those last 30 days? Totally butchered that explanation, but yeah, I don't know. We've talked about velocity way too much, but I always talk about it as a double-edged sword. I think it's great in the short term, great mid-season type of thing. If you've got somebody who is suddenly throwing harder, yes, maybe that could be a precursor to injury. A ton of pitchers get hurt anyway. Like I don't know. I think in general, in season, if you see an uptick in fastball velocity in general, that's a good thing and will lead to better results. So that's typically how I look at the risers. The fallers, I'm always concerned about. And if I just scroll down to the bottom for the YouTube crowd, like there's Mike Soroka sticking out like a sore thumb. There's my guy, Kyle Freeland.
Jesus. I was like, we're going to start at the bottom, so you can leave it there.
At the bottom? All right, yeah. There's Soroka with minus 2.2 miles per hour from 94.1 down to 91.9. Like, anyone who drops more than a tick in the middle of the season, it's like I'm worried.
And rightfully so, is the best way I'll put that. I want to start with David Peterson. This is a guy that the ratios are still very good. He's not giving up a lot of runs right now. But I guess one thing we can maybe take away from decreased velocity like this, going 92.4 to 91.6, the strikeouts and swinging strikes have just dropped dramatically as the season's gone on. He's pitching a ton more contact. So it's not like not all these pitchers are just getting shelled, but at the same time, fantasy relevance. You mentioned like with Gore not getting wins, you're getting strikeouts, but you're not getting wins and ratios. Peterson doesn't go that deep into games, and you might be getting okay ratios, but getting zero strikeouts and probably not a ton of wins either.
Yep. I mean, I'm always going to trust the skills over the results. And if you've rostered David Peterson all season, congratulations. You have banked this 283 ERA. You've banked the 7 wins. But, like, I just don't see it's been a single-digit swinging strike all season, which has gotten lower over the last month, which you don't like to see with a drop in velocity. Control's been decent, but, like, I need more. You need more Ks in a high teen strikeout rate. I know we're smart enough as an industry now to pay attention to skills and not stats. So, like, I feel like 10, 15 years ago, you know, I'm aging myself here, but I feel like 10, 15 years ago, David Peterson would be going much higher in drafts entering 2026, assuming this continues. But we all kind of see the underlying skills for Peterson, and it's not great. So I don't love the outlook going forward with Peterson, because A, the skills don't really match the results, and B, like, things kind of aren't trending correctly in season, which you worry about with for someone like Peterson.
Yep, totally agree. And the junk man's a faller. Taj Bradley's a faller, which kind of goes with those skills. Kevin Gausman has gone from 94.5 to 93.8. This is one I wrote about him for today. It came out on Wednesday's daily matchups, and it really stood out because last start out gave up 5 runs against the Royals, which with no walks and 5 Ks, like, 10 strikeouts the previous start, 6 shutout with Detroit. Nice. 8 Ks against the Yankees. Nice. But then 2 Ks, 9, 3, 6. Like, my point being, there's Gausman. A lot of inconsistency with Kevin Gausman right now, a ton of inconsistency. Obviously relies on a splitter a lot, but the fastball needs to be popping to make everything else work, and that has decreased a bit.
I'm not super worried, though, about Gausman. Again, I always say these boards are not – this isn't – you know, this is the start of a conversation, start of a deeper dive for some of these guys. And with Gausman, even over the last month, been a ton of whiffs, a lot of thrown strikes, 21% K-minus walk for Gausman. I know he pitched today – he was that 20-1 game, God, against the Rockies, but got the win, gave up 1 run, I think, and pitched well. Again, it's Colorado, but it is Coors. So 8 Ks, 2 strikeouts. Like, I'm not really that worried about Gausman. I do think, like, it's the inconsistency part. I feel like Gausman is just someone you ride with, and you're going to take your lumps, but you're also going to have to, you're also going to have, you know, the highs to go with the lows. And at the end of the season, it's worked out very well for Kevin Gausman.
Speaking of that Coors game, did you see he hit a home run to give the Jays their 20th run of the game?
I did see he was off a position player. So, you know, I don't know if Ernie Clements homer actually counts or not, but actually
I'll let you know how my NFBC tracker counts it, because I'm pretty sure it will.
Yeah. So Ernie Clement did homer off a position player today. Do you know who the position player was?
I have no clue. I'm guessing it was Britton Doyle.
It was Austin Nola. And so I'm looking through box scores, and I'm seeing A Nola, like seven earned with like 0.1 innings. I'm like, oh my God, this is triggering. You're sweating, I know it's not Aaron flashbacks. Nola. Yeah. Or it's like, did Aaron Nola get traded to whoever the hell, Colorado? But no, it was Austin Nola pitching in the ninth. But yeah, when I saw A Nola with all those runs, I was like, yeah, I've seen this before.
That's funny. All right, look at some of the risers here. It's a weird list, honestly, because a lot of these pitchers don't do it for me. You got Erod, who is a whip disaster. He pitched well in his last outing. That might help with this. A couple rough ones before that. Crochet has been great. Sensatella, I'm not going near. Tyler Anderson can't win a game. Talked about Severino, though, so that's a plus. I'll let you finish off this. Anything stand out to you on this list? Glasnow has been good. But as a whole, this rising velocity list isn't quite sparking my interest.
Agreed. And Austin Gomber going from 88.7 to 89.8.
He was on the K to walk riser too, and I just ignored him. Oh, going from 2 to 12.
Yeah. All right. I should probably put like a minimum on these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that doesn't do it. The ones that do stand out, though, Garrett Crochet stands out to me just because I want to see Garrett Crochet pitch through an entire season of full workload. And not only is Crochet doing that, he's pitching well, but also increasing his velocity as he's doing it. So that's nice. Glasnow, I want to say this is more just like a return to normal for him coming off.
I think so. Yeah.
The injury. Glasnow has been, 96-4, 96-4, 97-5 each of the last three seasons. And now he's up from 95-2, which is really low for Glasnow, kind of back to normal for Glasnow. So I actually think that's really encouraging for however long Tyler Glasnow can stay healthy. So Glasnow and Garrett Crochet for me are the two ones where I'm like, that's interesting. And also a little bit of Severino. Again, talked about him earlier, but whenever you're on multiple of these boards, it's kind of that whole picture coming together. And that's either a good thing, or if you're in the red, not so much.
Well, let's talk about the third board that Luis Severino's on as well. Yeah, pitch mix change, Ryan, where this is a very, very interesting one to me, because when I see one of the other boards and then the person's on this board also, usually stands out to maybe the reason why, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, no. So what this is, and again, we've done another show about this in the past, but for anyone who missed it or whatever, basically I'm tracking how much a pitcher is changing their pitch mix, their usage over the last month since before that. And it doesn't matter if it's been good, bad, whatever. I'm just tracking kind of the magnitude of the change. If you've completely remade your pitch mix and you used to throw all fastball cutter, now you're throwing all slider changeup. I know that's a terrible example. You would have a 200 score in pitch mix. I'm basically comparing the before and after. How often are you throwing that pitch? And then adding that up across all your pitches in your arsenal. So we've got a little score here just that kind of quantifies that. That's how the list is ordered. But most importantly, by far most importantly, is the pitch mix change working? And so we're using strikeout minus walk and also CSW, which is called plus swinging strike rate. Two really good measures in smaller samples to check that out. And of course, it's color coded. So I'm interested in the guys that are not only changing their mix, but have Oregon Duck Green colored skills since they've made that change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Brandon Fott's at the top of the board here. I think that's a very interesting one because for good reasons, a lot of people were giving up on Brandon Fott. It was not quite turning out the way many had hoped, but he's starting to show signs of life of late. Like, he had the 7-run outing against Detroit, but 2 runs against the Padres, 2 runs against Houston, shut out St. Louis, 2 against the Padres. So 4 out of his last 5 starts have been very effective. He has 0 walks in 3 out of those 5 starts. Strikeouts aren't still elite, but he's also only allowed a home run in one of the last 4 starts. He allowed 3 against Detroit. So we talked about Fott in the past. It's home runs. It's K not walk guys. He's not doing that right now. He's still not striking out a ton of guys, but the K to walks increased. And I'm guessing it has something to do with the pitch mix change.
Yeah. And the real bugaboo for Brandon Fott in the past has been lefties. And just trying to find a pitch that can do something against lefties. So the big change for Brandon Fott has been basically throwing like a new cutter. And that can get in on lefties, and that is something that can at least show them something different, different mix, different direction, different movement, that sort of thing. So nice to see Brandon Fott at least incorporating that as something for lefties to think about. It's funny, if we did this show, and again, this is the perils of doing this type of thing. If we did this show like 2 weeks ago, Brandon Pfaadt, like in his run from June and July, was electric. And then the last two outings, like, not great. 7 Ks, 3 walks, 3 homers in his last two. So ebbs and flows of a season, but it's nice to see Brandon Pfaadt develop the cutter, something that he can show lefties. And at least if he can just be average against lefties and dominate righties, given the swing and miss, kind of curb some of that home run stuff with the volume that Brandon Pfaadt provides. I'm never going to quit this guy. Just never going to quit this guy. It's like you with Mackenzie Gore. I don't know. Probably to my detriment, but it's nice to see him make that switch.
Let's just make it a point. I have a lot of Gore Pfaadt teams, so I love their ADPs at the upside. It just didn't pan out, of course. Shane Boz is on this list. He's still not pitching well, so I don't know if you have anything on him. But it's every other start, he's like, okay, and then he gets lit up again. It's just I still don't see it with him just yet. I'm just not there.
I think Boz pitched today and pitched well, but you're right. It is a roller coaster. I believe there was a really rough stretch with Shane Boz, I want to say 2 months ago, where he was kind of showing that he was tipping pitches and made those changes. Yeah, ton of strikeouts as our guy UT says in the chat. So you like to see that from Boz. I'm still waiting for this. I've been wrong about Shane Boz a ton. Still waiting for Boz to kind of fall apart, but he's still pitching very well and changing things up in August. And I would not have expected that from him entering the season.
Now, this is one where it stands out and it makes a ton of sense. This is Jack Leiter. He's got 39-point score change. There's K to walks, 13.9% increase, 28.9% CSW. And this is one I've kind of been watching through DFS. It's been 3 earned runs or less in every start since June 22nd. So 2, 4, 6, 7 starts, which is great. Going at least 5 innings and almost like went 4 1/3 in his last against Seattle. But we're talking 5 or more Ks in 6 straight, 7 or more in 4 out of 6. Still has a walk issue, but the strikeouts have come up a ton because there's like 3 or 4 Ks in like every start prior to that. So we're seeing a lot more strikeouts, a lot more swing and miss. The walks are still a problem, but going deeper into the games, he's showing signs of life from a prospect pitcher you want to see as the season goes on.
Yes, we are. And with Leiter specifically, we're seeing fewer sliders, more changeups, and more four-seamers. Four-seamers been pretty damn good this year. So you like to see this from someone who has a decent amount of prospect pedigree, hasn't really figured it out so far through his first couple tours in the majors. But yes, agreed. To see the kind of strikeout rate jump quite a bit for Jack Leiter over the last month plus has been very encouraging. And you like to see him kind of switch things up a bit to be able to get there.
Yes. Mookie Blaylock's on the list for the wrong reason.
Yes, there's our guy, man.
That's been a rough because last start was so bad. Destroyed.
His first start after we anointed him was Mookie good. Blaylock was like good. Was sick.
Yes. But the Coors, not so fast, my friends. Yeah. So that was bad. But I want to hit on the guy right below him because he is the like just Dude. Kryptonite to my life. And that is Tanner Bibee, who is as Oregon Duck Green as you can get on this board. Yep. And you look at his performance on the mound, it does not match that Oregon Duck Green. So what are we looking at here?
Yeah, this is tough because it's, you know.
That's why I keep playing him, though. I see stuff like this. I'm like,
God. No. It's been a 5.67 ERA for Tanner Bibee over the last month. 25 Ks, 5 walks. It's been really good for Tanner Bibee lately. And even going one level deeper, 33% ball rate. Again, that's really good control. League average is 36% and a lot of whiffs. This is basically the highest swing strike rate for Tanner Bibee that he's had of the season over a month span at 13.5%. And then you tack on that kind of jump in skills with more curveballs, fewer sliders, just mixing in. I like both those secondaries, but if he can kind of even, if Bibee can even those out a bit and keep hitters guessing on which one is coming, I think that's a good thing. And so it's another guy I'm not going to give up on. Like, yes, it's been absolutely brutal, but I think Tanner Bibee's still pretty good. He's just trying to figure things out, figure out how to get around a admittedly pretty bad fastball. but he's been doing so very well over the last month, even if it hasn't been shown in the surface ERA.
Yes, very, very much so. There's Glasnow and Yuri Perez on the list, which is what we'd like to see for corresponding stuff.
Yep.
Anything else on this list before I give another story from my vacation?
Oh, I love story time.
So there's a name on this list. I gave the story in the Discord. But Dustin May is on this list. And, oh, yeah. And I figure the listeners deserve to hear this story because I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I got to be full sarcastic a-hole as you can be while still being kind of nice. It's the best way I could say it. So going through security, security's kind of being difficult. We had to go do some stuff. So I'm sitting there with my daughter waiting to go into the park, which is right where we're at, right by the entrance. And the security guard that was kind of a pain in the butt, he's a young kid, looked like Crocodile Dundee. There's these two Dodger fans that come behind me through security. And the security guard goes, "Oh, are you guys okay today?" And I'm sitting there trying, I'm listening. And they go, "Yeah, why?" And he's like, "Well, you know, Dustin May got traded. Are you okay with that?" Before they could comment, I turn and I go, "Why wouldn't they? Dustin May sucks." And the Dodgers fans look at me with like a smirk on their face. The security guard just looks like he sees a ghost. Like, what just happened? And I'm like, "Guys, he can't strike anybody out. He's got a great slider. It's great for videos. It's nothing there. Go look at his Fangraphs page. Go look at his Savant page. He's not that great." And I just walked away.
Did you cite his pitch mix change score over the last 30 months?
I wish I would have looked at this. I should have. I wish I would have looked at it because,
like, no matter what he tries to do, he still sucks.
Yeah, I'm like, yes, he like has this slider that just drops off the face of the planet, but he can't do anything else. Like, and that's just not going to cut it. He's built for pitching, Ninja. That's about as far as it goes. He might be great as like a seventh inning reliever someday, but he's not a starter. But I just walked away when I said, "Look at his numbers, and you'll understand."
That's pretty good. They probably didn't expect like some random dude to just go off on Dustin May. Like they were expecting like casual conversation, and then.
To be fair, I was wearing my Timon shirt that says "I specialize in sarcasm," so like they should have known this was coming.
You should wear that shirt on Twitter.
I might wear it to FPass, don't you worry. Like when people just to know what's up.
Yeah, that's all awesome, right. Though.
Like that. Yeah. Any final thoughts on these boards before we get to some listener questions? Because that Dustin May thing was like a highlight of my day while I was there.
Let's answer some questions.
All right. I believe we have one Twitter question before a slew of Discord questions. So this is a Discord member, Martin Sokolsky on Twitter asked, "Welcome back, boys. It's great to have you. Great to have you. Thanks for your help with the old Patreon there.
Yep.
Is Mackenzie Gore actually average or did he just run out of gas?" And we definitely discussed that on the show. So I think we're leaning towards average.
Lean towards average, because I would have said last year he's out of gas again. And then September happened. So I don't know, man. People come to me for answers and I'm like, I don't know. It's so freaking hard to predict this stuff. But it's been terrible. It's been absolutely terrible. It has been.
Our buddy Corbin Young says, "Sell me on Joey Wentz. Ryan tried to sell you on a good stream."
Yeah.
And then what the heck is going on with Mackenzie Gore? We have a lot of Gore folks. Just be prepared for this.
Yep.
Dr. Doom has one here that we did not discuss. Does that board include Gavin Williams' almost no-hitter today? That was no. Gavin Williams has been a lot better of late. Just someone to keep an eye on, folks. He will probably be on this board after one more good start. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a Gavin Williams hater. I don't want to say I always will be, but until the control gets better, pitched well today. Well, did he go complete game?
Today,
no hitter. He was close. Still has a 10% walk rate over the last month. So like still improving,
which
but
is an improvement though.
I know, but like, I mean, this was my problem with Mackenzie Gore ending the season as well. It's just like, it's just really hard to be very, unless you have like a Blake Snellian type strikeout rate.
That is amazing. Like,
it's just hard. It's hard to get by with a double digit walk rate and pitch deep into games and pitch efficiently. So I don't think I'm going to be, Dr. Doom says Soto hit a home run off of Gavin Williams in the ninth. I believe that was to break up a no hitter. So
it was to break up the no-no. Yes.
So yeah. Impressive stuff. Impressive run. But for me, until I see the walk rate go down, I'm not going to be in on Gavin Williams.
Kevin A says, do your parameters change as late in the season when evaluating possible starting pitching claims for the stretch run?
Yeah, so with the streamers, I'm always looking at schedule, but as we get to this last, what do we have, 7 weeks left of the season, something like that?
Yep.
You can almost kind of map out the rest of the season matchups and that sort of thing. So I as we get closer to the end of the season, even more so leaning on what these matchups are going to be for a lot of these guys as well. I'm looking at workload. Is their team in the hunt? Are we looking at September shutdowns, slowdowns, that sort of thing? I think you need to keep that all in mind. And once September hits, dude, it's all out the window. Like you are dropping guys you didn't think you'd drop. You're adding guys you've never heard of. In my case, and it becomes the Wild West. But I much more look at the schedule and the matchups as we get closer to the end of the season.
100% agree with you on that one. It's scheduled matchups in recent form. Like if the guy, we look at the underlying numbers for certain things are much more important to me for draft season or early in the season. Right now, it's like the underlying numbers help us understand if they really do stink or not. But I if the guy's throwing well, I'm much more likely to take my chances on him going forward, and we'll see how it goes.
I get that. Yep.
Dr. Doom says that Soroka velo change feels criminal knowing the outcome. They can't see that in practice. Question mark. Nah, the bullpen, I don't think they're paying that. Like they're just more worried about getting their work in to keep their arm going. Maybe they I don't think so though. He flat out said he didn't feel any problems until he took the mound that day.
So. Yeah. But still, it's an indicator that and anytime you're more than a tick down, it's cause for concern. Definitely was for Chicago Cub, Michael Soroka.
For at least two innings. Michael C. says, although better recently, Shota's K percentage is down 5%. I see a tick lower velo, and the splitter swinging strike is down from 26 to 17%. He ditched a change that was low usage but effective versus righty, 17% swinging strike. Missed time, but even before that, it was under 7K per nine. Do you see anything else or just a slow start and an injury, maybe a nice buy? I'm still in. He actually pitched, I felt like, better like a day or two ago. I don't know if he's ever been fully right this season, but maybe I'm just because I'm a Shota fan.
Yeah, I like Shota, I think, more than most, but I think once the numbers kind of stop, once the music stops, I take an unbiased look at Shota this coming off season. I think I'm going to see too much contact and too many fly balls.
There's a lot of that.
It's a 54% fly ball rate, which can really help your whip. Like Shota Imanaga has a 1.0 whip with a BABIP that has been friendly, but like not super friendly. You look at the ERA estimators, like a mid fours ERA type guy, and Shota's been at the down three. So like, I just feel like this is one of those seasons where the home run gods have been nice to Shota. I just think it's hard to have a sub 20% strikeout rate and that many fly balls and have a good ERA. Given how good the control is, like maybe Shota's control is just so damn good, the command is so good that he knows what he's doing and he can get by with that type of approach. He certainly has been in each of the last two seasons. It kind of goes to what you just said, Bubba, is like, how are they actually throwing right now? And Shota's, some downs, but he's been pretty solid.
And that BABIP you mentioned does help when he has a 54% fly ball rate.
Yes, it does. Yep.
Mailman Mike, Freddie P was on the wrong side of some boards earlier in the season. What changed, and is he to be trusted down the stretch? I don't know why you wouldn't trust him down the stretch.
He was. I want to say when we did this show last month or 2 months ago, Freddie was on some faller list. I'd like to see his like month by month velo and see if there's been a change there. Oh no, that's just August. There hasn't been that much. Actually, it's gone up. First month of the season for Freddie was 95, and then in May it dropped down to like 94. So maybe that's why he was down, but then it has ticked way back up to normal June and July. So long way of saying what you said in one sentence, which is keep throwing fastball Freddie out there.
Yep. Keep rolling. Last one here is from Britton Allen, and this is a total, I think, tongue-in-cheek situation here. Why don't I see Warming Burnable on these lists? He's on every list right now because he's
on every list.
Hot.
Hey, and maybe he'll be on some of these lists if the Rockies are throwing out a Nola. Maybe we'll see burn a bell on some.
Dude, that's amazing stuff there. But what else is amazing? We're back. Another episode in the books. Final thoughts from our last 30-day live pitching bloom board.
Good to be back in the saddle. Glad I only got one trade deadline team wrong. I'll take
second
that.
Player we talked about, but pretty good. Yep.
It came a little early. Came a little early. I prefer it to be an hour in. When
the bright side is you at least had where he used to play. Like you had, and it actually worked in a conversation. So you weren't far off.
Wasn't too far off. I'll take one. Wish it would have been later, but good to be back with you, man. We will be back at it Thursday night, tomorrow night, for Fab Preview for a week, whatever it is.
21.
God.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No, we're getting close to the end, my friend. Damn. It's getting close. I don't know what Zach Waxman's gonna say my friend on anymore when they don't have any reviews and preview pods to do.
Yeah, I guess.
You guys won't have any more fun.
No, he likes to have fun. Favorite word.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Make sure you check us out on the Twitter. Ryan's there at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intric. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 265. Catch y'all next time.